Gonkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
Yeah, I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're crossing over into the 2010s with Autechre's 10th LP, Oversteps, and its accompanying EP, another album-length one, Move of 10, both released in 2010 itself. As always, we've worked as many of your emails as possible into this episode, but we'll get to the rest on another bonus episode next week, so be sure to tell us what you think about Oversteps and Move of 10, or about anything we've already talked about or are going to talk about, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. So, let's get right into it. Dan, what background info do we need to know about Oversteps?
Autechre released Oversteps, their 10th LP, on February 22nd, 2010. In interviews from the time, Sean and Rob described the process as a reaction against their last few albums. Untilted had been meticulously prepared in advance of hitting record, and the live jamming on Choristus left them with stereo recordings that couldn't be edited in post-production. This time, as Rob explains, we wanted to have something where we could change at the last minute any detail or any event, something where they could follow threads and nurture a certain feeling to create a more cohesive end product. Sean also notes that we were concentrating on melody, harmony, counterpoint, and all that because the rhythm stuff had been second nature for a while, and we thought we might learn more if we came at it from the opposite angle. As you might have guessed, Oversteps was also different from the hardware-driven Untilted and Choristus because the guys returned to designing sounds in Max MSP, which they've mostly stuck with ever since.
Yeah, in regard to critical reception, reviews for Oversteps were pretty glowing, with most publications praising this new emphasis on melody and accessibility. AllMusic and Pitchfork described the album as a return to form, and The Wire called it, quote, a collection of music as nuanced and beguiling as any other disc they have released, eventually naming it the 20th best album of 2010. On Rate Your Music, fans have rated Oversteps at a solid 3.46, and I must admit I was quite surprised to see a thread on R. Autechre, made specifically for us to see, calling on the many Oversteps haters out there to voice their complaints about it. Did you see that, Dan? What did you think, and what is your sense of Oversteps status nowadays?
Yeah, I did see that thread. That was funny. You know, I always kind of thought Oversteps was pretty well loved, and you know, we've talked about a little bit, like, you know, this middle period. I always kind of thought that Oversteps was what people considered, you know, kind of the end of that, and that, you know, return to form, like AllMusic said. But then that thread made me question if that's accurate or not.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of beloved. And then, you know, doing research these past 2 weeks, I mean, not just that thread, but just reading as much as I could about it. I mean, it just seems like there's been sort of a backlash to this album for some reason. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's something we'll keep circling back to because, you know, weirdly, like a lot of the feedback we got, the emails we got from listeners would like acknowledge this. Like, I know everyone shits on this, but, you know, so we'll see a lot of comments like that. You know, I think we could sort of transition to our personal histories with Oversteps. I was kind of late getting to this one. You know, I think I was so initially disappointed with Choristus that I skipped right over this. And then when I fell in love with XI, I went back and I kind of loved Oversteps. I mean, I just thought it was great. That being said, I always forget it exists because it's sort of weird how, like, Choristus seems to, you know, this huge, just oversized project, you know, that just like spans discs and everything and like all these different variations and jamming and all this. You know, they start that with Choristus and then they sort of continue it through the 2010s. I always think of Choristus as like, okay, that's where they first got interested in this like big data dump style idea. And I forget that there's a regular length album right in the middle there, you know?
Yeah, it really like sort of, you know, almost seems, you know, like if I didn't know any better, I think I would flip those two as the order. But my personal history, this is about the time I started like being, you know, more aware of Autechre. Like, you know, I'd gotten into like Tri Repetae and Amber and stuff, but you know, I wasn't following like new records. But this was the first one I remember like really coming out and like checking it out and stuff. But kind of like you, I also sort of forget about it. It's not one I like frequently put on or anything. But anyway, we'll talk about this more during the episode, I'm sure. But I don't know why. I have always like sort of thought about it as that, like, oh right, you know, when they get like real good again, it's the end of that middle period, you know, sophomore slump kind of thing. But I also always forget about it, so I don't know how I rectify like those two feelings in my mind.
Yeah, I think I agree, because you know we should clarify that like we both sort of fell in love with Choristus almost for the first time doing this podcast. But for the longest time, I feel like our sense of Autechre's trajectory has been that they sort of wandered for a bit and made some less than stellar work. And then it did feel like Oversteps was the reemergence, even if XI was the one that like kind of sealed the deal and sort of broke through. I'm going to ask, as always, how you would describe the album and its overall sound. But once again, we've been blessed with an interpretation from Sean himself, who writes in the 2013 Ask Autechre or Anything. For me, Oversteps is about memory. And when asked if he means nostalgia, clarifies, nah, memory. So what do you think of that? And how would you describe the overall sound here?
Well, one, I was thinking about that quote, you know, I read it earlier. And like, does he mean memory as in like, computer memory, like RAM, or does he is that like why he says no to nostalgia? Because I don't know that it sounds like, you know, computer memory, but I mean it is made like in Maxim SP and stuff, so also maybe it's just because I don't know, really, you know, I guess nostalgia is different from memory, but you know, whatever. But the way I no sense in getting in the weeds here, but the way, you know, I feel about the record, you know, this is sort of like, you know, Autechre's ambient kind of album, at least for the first time. Not like strictly in the sense like you know, it's not like music for airports or something like that. It's just like a lot less beat driven and more melody harmony, you know, those kind of, I mean, like that quote I read at the top, you know, melody, harmony, counterpoint, all that stuff, it really does like feel like they're focusing on that for this record more than the beats. I think this is one of the first records where like the synth sounds kind of like more at the forefront and are more of what I think about when I think about this record than like the the sounds of the drums and the you know, percussion sounds.
I mean, I know there's it's somewhat controversial, I guess, because there are a couple interviews that I read where, you know, Autechre themselves are like quick to point out like, we don't consider this ambient, and you know, fans often describe this as ambient, and then other fans will be like, it's not ambient, you know, and there's some like some debate about that, which I think we could talk about more later. But it does have this, I don't know, there's something about it that it's so bright and just glimmering and, you know, glittering. It's like these really beaming FM synth kind of sounds.
Yeah.
But it does have, you know, what I would call an ambient quality, hopefully without pissing too many people off, and that it just has this kind of floating, drifting, like cloud-like quality to a lot of these pieces. Like they just sort of come into being and just hang there like motionless, just little particles, like, you know, glimmering around and bouncing off of each other. And then it just sort of floats away, you know. I mean, it's like it's just weird. I mean, we'll dive into all this stuff, the track structures and everything, but it's got a pretty clear instrumentation and I would say like pretty clear structures in like almost like just this kind of aimlessness, you know. It's just different from the jamming they've been doing, like very different from the jamming they've been doing on the last couple albums.
Yeah, it definitely very different from the last couple records. And I think you're right, you know, these sort of like, it has this that particle, you know, floating kind of feeling. I think the FM synthesis is heavy here, which I think that's like what gives it that ambient feel, because, you know, I mean, I even had to clarify what I said, you know, it doesn't seem like ambient music in that sense, you know. It's nothing like music for airports or you know, even like Tim Hecker or something like that. It just has like that sort of like quality to it, but it's still like more like substantive than ambient, you know. Like ambient music, I think a lot of times you know, floats into the background, and you know, I mean, Brian, you know, that was like his point for it and everything, you know. Like discrete music and whatnot. I don't feel that this is like purposely supposed to be like backgroundy ambient kind of thing. It just has like that sort of like really reverby particle-y you know, feeling to it.
Yeah, but that's what's like so weird about it, is that yes, there is just tons of reverb on this album, and I hear people joke like, this is like, so you like reverb the album, you know? But reverb is not used the same way it is on Choristus, where it makes it feel like it's in some being played in some weird empty space or something. It's almost exaggerated to the point of like reverb is another instrument itself, and it's absolute walls of reverb. It feels like, you know, it's just, it's so all encompassing that it is not like what I would call like nothing. Like, it doesn't make me feel like I want to use the word minimalism, because I don't get the sense of like, you know, wide open spaces or anything. It's like oppressively huge. You know, it feels like dark matter or something. And a lot of this album makes me think of, I don't know, floating around in space or something like that. I also think that the, you know, instrumentation is kind of fascinating, because there seems to be a lot of emphasis on like designing sounds that sound like physical objects or something. There's lots of chiming and bells and harpsichord type sounds, and they feel like they ring out in like a real object in a real room kind of way. And yet there's this otherworldly reverb that I was describing that just doesn't sound like anything you've ever heard in the real world or ever will. And there's plenty of like digital sounds that just, you know, like I think about on Known One, there's like this lead synth, you know, there's all these like nice chiming harpsichords and bells and things. And then there's like this lead synth thing that just sounds like it's ripping the fabric of space-time or something. And it's like this weird mixture of physical objects and something that just sounds totally digital. You know what I mean? It's just a strange compositional arrangement, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I feel like this is the first like Ottekker album where there's like so many of these like sort of string sounding instruments. Yeah. You know, like you said, like the harpsichord kind of thing. Like, I feel like we don't hear like synth sounds like that before, you know, sounds that sound like real things like bells and you know, like not only like do they sound like real instrument, they sound like acoustic, you know, kind of instruments. Which, you know, it is really like strange up to this point. I don't think we hear anything like that, and like you said too, it is mixed in with these like really strange you know, clearly, you know, digital you know, computer kind of noises. It's a new dichotomy for Ottekker Records.
I mean, it's a little early for a Gabe overthinks it, but I kept thinking about what FM synthesis is, you know, and like FM synthesis, and I'm not like a historian on this or anything or any kind of expert, but you know, it seems like in the 80s, this FM synthesis was kind of revolutionary because it allowed for the creation of much more realistic sounds than were ever possible before. So you could actually like make something that sounded sort of like a real piano, you know, and then you could like tour with an actual keyboard or something like that. But at the same time, there's something like nothing sounds more synthetic than FM synthesis, you know, on the flip side of that.
Like, it's like that you hear, like, Uncanny Valley kind of
thing. Yes,
it's like too real sometimes.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, there's just something about like, you know, when you hear an FM, you know, synth, like a bass lick or something, a slap bass or something.
Seinfeld theme just, song.
Yes, it is like so synthetic. It is so bizarre. And I just feel like this album almost plays with that, or seems to be like interrogating it a little bit, because there is, every track has stuff that sounds like totally real and then stuff that sounds totally synthetic. And it just seems to like capture the spectrum that FM synthesis is capable of or something. Maybe we can return to that, but I want to keep breaking down this overall sound by bringing in a couple listener emails. So listener Steve wrote, Oversteps is their melody album, or at least their emotive melody album, which one could argue is more difficult to get right than experimental sounds. Most of the tracks are beatless, but don't call it ambient, and they have multiple melodies layered over each other. Similarly, listener Andreas writes, Oversteps is a gorgeous album, and I'm surprised so many people call it a samey ambient album. It's such a melodically complex and constantly shifting album. He adds, it's much more aesthetically influenced by Western classical harmony, particularly the more syncopated extended chord stuff in the Romantic era, than dance music. So what do you think about the, you know, you mentioned the melody is kind of the star of the show here. What kind of melodies are we getting here?
I think what listener Steve said is really good, like that it's more difficult to get that right than it is to get experimental sounds, you know. And I think, because like this, I don't think I would describe any like other Ottekker, at least not an earlier one, as like sort of like beautiful sounding, you know, like the melodies and stuff are like very like nice, you know.
Pretty, yeah.
I mean, so much so, like I played this in the car with my wife, like when we were going to pick up food, and I didn't get told to turn it off. I don't know that she enjoyed it, but she didn't make me turn it off. You know, so like that, you know, I feel like that's a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, it's like very pretty. It's often like very straightforward melodically, I think. Like it's just, you know, not since, I don't know, a couple of things on a couple of tracks on like LP5 or maybe even like the Garbage EP, have they been like so openly melodic. And I'm thinking of the last track on the Garbage EP specifically, but just like so straightforwardly like pretty. You know, at the same time, it's true. Like, I think, again, about Known One and how it just seems to layer, like, melody after melody on top of each other. Like, you could sort of listen to any individual melodic part on that track, and it's, like, very beautiful. And then they're all on top of each other, and it's just, like, this, just, like, a lovely, like, interweaving of all kinds of melodies. You know, there are tracks, like, I think, like, you know, listener Andreas sort of singled out Sea on Sea as an example of that kind of like classical style. And it is a good example of like, there are a lot of tracks that have, I don't know, they sound like sonatas or something, because it's like quite a long flowing harpsichord type line. And then it seems to like go into variations on that melody before sort of returning or something. It's like, you know, genuine explorations. And I guess what I want to ask is like, there are sometimes where I'm like, this is a wildly complex, like melodic workout, but then overall I want to describe these tracks as like pretty just simple and straightforward in their melodic beauty. You know what I mean? Like, which is it?
Yeah, it is a little complicated like that. I do think it is kind of like straightforward, and in the way that I think to the record's kind of detriment. I think the record and the listener you know, sort of mentioned this, it becomes a little samey throughout, and it gets a little the length and everything of it, and just like, you know, being so, you know, beatless, you know, it's not entirely that, but I mean compared with the past and everything, I think it like easily sort of drifts out of your attention and gets sort of like, I mean, there's several songs on here that I feel like, and someone mentioned it on that Reddit thread you brought up, that they said that they layered them just to make sure, and that it sounded better because they only had to listen to it once, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah,
you know, like I mean, that's maybe going to the extreme, but I think they have a point at least slightly. You know, that there are like a lot of kind of samey sounds and feelings on this record.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like in cases like this, I've just decided that it's better to just come right out with it. But I don't think I like this album very much. I feel like on our draft episode, we like danced around it for a long time before we like could bring ourselves to admit it. But I don't totally love this album. And that's a big reason why. Like, you know, you get tracks like Known One is the first one I think that comes to mind, where it's like just sort of a beautiful like harpsichord piece or something. It almost sounds like deliberately archaic in the way it's composed.
Yeah.
And it's quite a complex, like beautiful melody. I mean, like I said, actually several melodies on top of each other. But if you really like step back, it kind of goes, it just has like an A part, a B part, an A part, and a B part. And there's some like maybe generative or algorithmic qualities to the way that all of these like beautiful melodies are interacting with each other. But what happens there, and what happens on Sea on Sea, like another track that really works for me, is that something sort of like comes into being, like a certain, like the prettiest melody wins and it becomes the star, and everything else is kind of like serving it and playing as counterpoint to it. But then there are like several tracks where, you know, I just like think of like O equals zero or whatever, like Redfall and like Krylon. It's just like glittering, dazzly prettiness, but like nothing really like comes to the fore. It's just like lots of little, you know, clinking sounds like bells and stuff. And there's like prettiness in there, but no, there's just no clear melody to grab onto. By the time I get to like Krylon, I'm like, are we doing this again? Like, we're really going to just do more like just plinking prettiness?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, I think that's the problem with it. You know, like when I first put this record on each time, I'm always like, always kind of gets me. I'm like, oh yeah, the song's pretty rad. This album's not that bad. And then I realize around, you know, probably O equals zero and on, I'm like, oh, is this is the last song, right? And I'm like, oh wait, no, they're gonna do the same thing for, you know, for 30 more minutes. It was a record like when I would listen to it at work, you know, for the last 2 weeks, I always would do that. I would always like think I was on the last song, or I would just like sort of forget where I was. And not like in a good, like, oh, you know, you're getting lost in the music kind of thing, like in a, these songs all kind of sound so similar and just like, I mean, frankly, like get a little boring. I won't beat around it either. I didn't really like this, record. In fact, I kind of mentioned it at the beginning, I thought I liked this record a lot. And in fact, like I always rate every like record I listen to and stuff on Rate Your Music just for my own, didn't remember what records I like to listen to. And I had to bring it down a couple stars. I was like, I don't like this record as much as I thought I did. And stuff, you know.
Well, it's something I wanted to ask you, actually, because I had sort of the same experience. And, you know, we always talk about, like, whenever we sort of start listening to a new record, you know, you start thinking, like, is this my favorite Autechre album? And then it, like, sort of settles into place. And I had that same feeling this time, but it was, like, very fleeting. Like, it just 1 hour I felt that way. But I wanted to ask, like, if you would call Oversteps accessible. And it's weird to me because I feel like when you just sort of listen to this, like, in passing, like maybe in the background or something, you are kind of just like captured by how pretty it is. And you just feel like there's something like mystifying and like just dizzying about how like all of these like glittering sounds and this just like cloud of particles like hanging over you. And then when you listen closely, it starts to sound like just very samey. And do you get what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. there's something about its accessibility that, like, it's immediately very impressive, and I don't know why it doesn't hold.
I think what it is like, you know, I think it is accessible. Like I said, you know, my wife didn't mind me having it on as much as she usually does and stuff, because I think there is like that sort of prettiness, especially like in the car, you know, like we're not sitting there, you know, listening to the, you know, we're talking and stuff, so it's just in the background. Like really enjoyed this as like an album I was listening to when I was reading. And it's really like a pretty nice like nighttime album. Like I would listen to it going to bed, going to sleep and stuff. And like, you know, that's pretty nice. It like in that sameness, like falling asleep to it, it kind of like doesn't matter where you are, you know? And that's pretty nice. But then like today, in getting ready, I was listening to it like in headphones, like outside, you know, doing some work around the house. And, it was getting a little, you know, annoying, you know, it didn't fit the mood. So maybe it's sort of like a, you know, a very like kind of moody record, you know, you got to be like in a certain sort of like location or headspace or time, maybe even.
Yeah. I just kept thinking about like, you know, and this is breaking the rule a little bit, but I was thinking about like Sign, and I was thinking specifically about the first track on Sign, M4 Lima, which, you know, I don't know, it has some resemblance maybe to some of the tracks here, but what I was really thinking about was like how it's like so bewildering. Like I just have no idea what's going on. I feel like I'm just being hurled through space and time, and like stuff is just bouncing around me. And I feel like I could listen to that 100 times and I'll never like really get a grasp on it, mm-hmm. like or figure out what's going on. And that's what makes it like kind of endlessly listenable. Whereas here, the first couple listens, you just feel like totally lost in space, and it's like quite a feeling. But then when you listen closely, you're like, these are actually very simple, like little pieces. They're I mean, deliberately like just pared down and like very, you know, they talk about and what you were reading, like trying to identify a thread and follow it. And I feel like they maybe like followed the thread too far to where like they're left with just one interesting idea that they really liked and developed and developed and developed. And it's just like this one idea is left. And once you like, once you get inside of it, you're not like, you don't have that bewildering, like dazzled feeling anymore.
Yeah, I think that's a good point with it, actually. You know, because with sign. I think there is, you know, we'll break the rule, but I think there is like sort of a like sign is sort of like oversteps ish, you know, done kind of better. You know, yeah. You know, we'll talk about it more when we get to sign and everything, but you know, it is that they sort of like just stick on that one thread, and not even like, and you mentioned this, like not even like sort of in that like minimalist kind of way, which I think they've done in the past. It's just sort of like, I hate to say it, but you know, one note kind of.
Well, on that note, let's, you know, I want to continue with a few other points that listeners made. We got some conflicting takes on the structure of the tracks here. Listener Steve writes, here Autechre are providing us songs, tracks that sound intentional and uniform, something different from the formula another one of your listeners suggested for Autechre, the most frequent being that a track starts out one way and then shifts into something else by the end. Most tracks on Oversteps are consistent. On the other hand, though, listener Marco says that Oversteps lacks the repetition found on most of their other records, and listener Joe acknowledged, but objected to, common criticisms of aimless synth noodling. Listener Mike writes, I think Oversteps suffers a bit as tracks like OS View X3 kind of wander around or dwell too long for my liking. So what is it? Like, are these, you know, like repetitive tracks? Are they not repetitive tracks? How would you describe the structures here?
I think what it is like, because it lacks like, you know, beats for the most part. I think that's like the easiest way to tell, like, you know, repetition and stuff. I think like the repetition is there in the sense that, like, you know, when they're sort of noodling around on the synth, you know, it's maybe not playing the exact same notes or pattern or whatever. But it's still like the same, like sort of, you know, idea or feeling like throughout a song, and that yeah. is like repetitive, but it's not like, you know, oh, here's a drum beat and that beat is gonna, you know, the entire time we've got that as like the anchor, you know, that is definitely like missing. So I see where, you know, people kind of could get the, you know, two different ideas. You know, I saw some people in that Oversteps Reddit thread too, like with throwing the you know, synth noodling kind of thing. This record doesn't feel like too noodly to me. You know, like as much as I don't really love this record, I don't think it fell into like noodling. I feel like when something's being noodly, it's just like, you know, it's just you know, pure wankery, and it doesn't ever feel like that to me. Like it feels like worked on, and you know, like they've just followed that thread too long on something, but not yeah. like aimlessly wandering around, you know.
Yeah, I mean, nothing really like sticks around too long, and it does have like the song like quality that that one of these listeners was describing, where it is like very focused idea. And maybe too focused, but there are tracks like Krylon I was talking about earlier, where it's just like, it's noodly in the sense of just like all of these pretty lines are sort of like weaving around and nothing is standing out. And it just makes it feel like it's just all texture or something. You know, what's interesting is that if you think about it, I mean, there kind of are plenty of beats on this album, but they're very low key. And I feel like they're often used as sort of a foundation, you know? So it's just like on Trial, right? Which is actually a song I like a lot, but the beat is incredibly straightforward. I mean, it almost sounds like a Boards of Canada beat. Actually, it reminds me specifically of like Tomorrow's Harvest era Boards of Canada. But, you know, it's a pretty straightforward beat, and it just feels like it's just meant to like kind of hold the thing together, like to mm-hmm. just be the yeah. structure. So sometimes there are like, I don't know what I would compare to like techno kind of arpeggios that are the only thing giving the track like forward momentum and kind of giving that like pulse, because everything else is just sort of drifting and hanging there. So it's interesting because it is simultaneously kind of like samey, but also like it's simultaneously repetitive, but also kind of like moving and drifting in some direction, if not, you know, any direction in particular. I mean, do you have any temptation to say that the cohesiveness of this record as a whole is like a positive?
Kind of not, because it's almost too cohesive in the sense that like it sounds too similar. you know, that sounds like a bad criticism, and it may be, but it's too cohesive, you know, like,
yeah.
there's not enough, like, you know, to change or you know, differentness in the album.
Yeah, I mean, I kept thinking about, like, it's so bizarre, because basically what I came to, and I want to hear your take on this theory, is that, like, you know, if you listen to Amber, right, I feel like tracks like Yolquin, you know, like the kind of interlude-y tracks, sort of foreshadow what happens here. But this record, it's like, it's almost like they sat down and thought, what if we made a record of interludes,
mm-hmm.
and then the bangers were the interludes? You know, like, they are so infrequent, and the main point is, like, the interlude-y kind of feel, to where when there is something with, like, kind of a clear, like, it stands out in a way that it just feels like a break from what is just this massive cloud of, like, ambient kind of noise. You know what I mean? Like, there's some variation, but it doesn't, like, shake the perception of the record as just one big ambient cloud.
Yeah, it's like the inverse Amber.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's definitely something to that, you know? I think that's a good point with it. This is the record of the sort of interlude things. And, I mean, we talked about it during Amber. I liked those interludes a lot on Amber. But I think they work so well because they're... you're getting fewer of those than other things that are driving the record forward. Just so much of this record is wandering and drifting, and there's just no, like, real you know, drive to it. They do that, like, sort of, you know, techno, like, minimalist techno sort of thing here and there, which I think, you know, works, but there's just not enough to sink your teeth in here.
Yeah, I just kept thinking about, like, what stands out on this record, and I don't think I would put much of anything here on, like, the, you know, on my, like, Mount Rushmore of Autechre tracks or anything.
Same.
But what stands out are the, like, purely kind of melodic pieces, like C on C, and the more banger type tracks, like Trill or D Show Cub, Quub. and I started thinking, like, okay, so basically on this album, it's like the big beats that stand out and the beatless tracks that stand out. And that's because so much of the album is, like, somewhere in between, which is like kind of a shitty spot to be. It's like sort of an interlude, but sort of a track, like, mm-hmm. not interlude-y enough to be an interesting, like, side path, but not full track enough to be, like, a clear idea.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So, more stuff I wanted to talk about, you know, Sean's comment about this being about memory, it seems like more of an emotional description of the album, although you make a good point that it could be sort of a process description. But several listeners describe this as a very emotional album. Listener Joe also wrote in to say that, I have a hard time fully immersing myself in Oversteps unless it's snowy outside. The music is just so wintry and arctic sounding that it just feels weird to listen to in the summer. Funny enough, in the Ask Autechre Anything, Sean is asked which is the pair's most summery album, and says, Oversteps maybe, but nah, none of them. I know you're, like, always hesitant to you know, like, ascribe, like, a mood to Autechre albums, but is Oversteps any different for you? Does it feel more openly emotional than their previous work?
I mean, I think I hinted at it a little bit earlier. This one does sort of, like, you know, I live in Florida, and so, you know, I don't think of it as a snowy record or anything, but I definitely think of it as a nighttime, you know, kind of album. It works much better in that sort of mood to it. But you know, I could see the you know, kind of arctic feeling to it. You know, it's been a little cold here, and I guess it you know, fit that decently enough. But this one does feel like sort of. I would say that it feels a little emotional, but I think it's in the sense that, like, it's just the, like, prettiness of the scents, and that, like, glitteriness is, like, a sort of easy way to, you know, invoke emotion in electronic music. So I feel like it this time, and maybe that is what he means by memory, you know, in the emotional sense. Because it does sort of feel like this is the one that I will go ahead and say that, you know, I think that's right.
Yeah, it's kind of profound, actually, the more I think about it, because I was going to say that it does feel emotional, but then at the other time, you know, at other times it just feels like to devolve into, like, purely generative music. Like, I feel like there's some tracks here where I feel like I'm I don't know, I've opened some like cool app that like some Silicon Valley like dork just got like $1 million like funding around for or something, and it's like a new way to contextualize ideas, and you're like moving stuff around, there's just like this weird generative music playing. Like sometimes it gets into that kind of like just faceless,
soulless algorithmic. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of profound actually, because if you think about like, okay, memory, it's like a very emotional thing. Sometimes it feels more like human memory, but other times it feels more like computer memory. Yeah. And I'm like, holy shit, what if that's the fucking point? Like, what if when it sounds completely soulless, it's supposed to sound completely soulless? You know, on that note, I think we should talk just a minute about the artwork, which kind of explores like this human inhuman divide. You know, my understanding, and actually like in the Ask Autic or anything, you know, Sean explains that sometimes they give the Designers Republic like a lot of direction, and sometimes they give very little. And they said that for this album, they gave very little. But what the Designers Republic came back with was like this idea of like something humans can never do is create a perfect circle, you mm-hmm. know? So the artwork is like hand drawn circles, and it's kind of getting at that idea of like, you know, the human and the inhuman, which feels very appropriate for this album and what we were just talking about, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, especially the, you know, the, those two types of memories and all. I mean, those circles on the front cover, they definitely like look, you know, human in the sense that, you know, there's some splatters around it and all, but I think like the text that's overlaid in the, or underlaid in, like in the background, you know, is very like computer, you know, like, non-human, I can't think of the word.
It's amazing artwork, I think.
Yeah, I like it. It is pretty cool.
But it really does kind of like, I mean, I didn't even like, when I, you know, when I was writing this outline, I wasn't even thinking of that comment you made about memory yet, and it's just like, it actually makes it even better. You know, and I think about like tracks like PT2, PH8, where it sounds very algorithmic, and then there's this like nice lead melody that actually does shine through. You know, it just sounds like exactly like the kind of thing that when, you know, we were talking about last episode where, I can't remember, Pearl and Subrange, where like Sean says that he'll just make sort of maybe generative things or slowed down things and just have them playing while he's like doing stuff, you know, like cleaning mm-hmm. up or whatever. And, you know, in the Ask Autic or anything, somebody sort of asks him like, a lot of oversteps makes me think of stuff that could just be like played forever while you're like kind of doing other things and maybe thinking about it. And he says, the original takes are long as fuck. I was doing that most days, followed by loads of editing in the evening. And so when I think of like that track PT2, it's just like, it sounds so much like that, like just a set it and forget it thing. And mm-hmm. then this incredibly pretty, like very human lead shines through and becomes the star of the track. And that's like, that's one moment where I just feel like it totally works. Like, I'm like, this sounds so soulless and like a shitty app. And then all of a sudden this melody comes through and I'm like, oh, I see it all. It's like playing with that kind of thing. As a sort of a side note, did you see that, you know, this link that listener Joe sent us that sort of lists all of the artwork with that featured circles in 2010? Did you see that?
Yeah. In fact, like when I saw the link, I was like, oh, I mean, yeah, it's probably like 5 or 6 or 10. And I was like, I'm sure, you know, the circle is a pretty, you know, normal shape. I was like, I bet just any year, if you wanted to be like, I bet there's a lot of circles. Yeah. And then I got to page, I think it's like 3 pages of like 50 things per page. And I was like, oh, goddamn, there's a lot of circles in 2010. It's strange.
I don't know what to make of that. I do not know. And I started thinking like, you know, like Suns,
Monoliths and Dimensions.
2009. They launched the wave, maybe. Maybe they were they kicked it off.
I know. I think, in fact, like the Oversteps artwork, I think, looks a lot like the painting. I can't remember the name of the painter that did Monoliths and Dimensions. He does a lot of minimalist stuff I like. I can't remember his name. But I think it's very similar to this record.
Yeah, I don't have anything profound to say about that.
No, but it was nuts. It really...
Look it up. Like, look up how many freaking 2010 albums have like just one big circle as the cover. Okay, but moving on. You know, I want to ask how you think Oversteps fits in with the rest of Autechre's discography. You know, on one hand, a lot of reviewers and listeners describe it as this like return to form, a return to the melodic sound of Amber specifically. But listener Marco writes, Oversteps was my first experience with Autechre, and I find it's their most unique album. Somehow I always manage to start with listening to a band with their like most left field album, like Soundtracks for the Blind with Swans. It has just a completely different timbre than every other album. So how do you think of Oversteps? Is it like kind of a return to form or like something totally new?
I don't know. You know, like I always sort of thought of it as this return to form, you know, but before this podcast, like I mentioned at the top, but now I'm like not so sure. You know, it definitely like feels like those kind of interludes of Amber, but it doesn't feel like the rest of the record. It doesn't really feel like anything else, they've done so far. I don't know. It's like with this podcast, you know, the last few episodes of it has like taught me is I thought there was like such a clear like delineation of between like this early, yeah, early period, mid period, you know, kind of current period. And I was like completely wrong, I think is what I've found out.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of parts of this, I sort of mentioned earlier, that just like sort of, it makes me think of like going back to the just clear open melodies of LP5. Like I'm thinking of Ray in particular. Like there are a lot of tracks that just seem to like shine in that way. We talked about how LP5 was like more focused on composition. And I feel like this kind of goes back to that, you know, which is interesting, but I still don't think I would call it a return to form. I don't really hear the Amber. I never really thought of Amber as like a totally melodic album. I feel like it's pretty cold and like challenging to me. Like I seem to remember when we did that episode, like reading a lot of reviews that were like complaining that it's so hard to get into because there's like no melody to latch onto or something like that. But you know, it does feel like LP5 ish to me. And yet, yeah, I mean, it just seems like some weird outlier that I feel like it almost makes sense that I forget it exists. You know, as you mentioned earlier, Autechre described the process as sort of a reaction against the process of their last few albums. And a bunch of listeners had comments about that. Joe, for instance, says every one of their albums does something new and different than the one before. This was by far the hardest left turn I could have imagined compared to the overall sound palette or even philosophy of Choristus. And listener Darren writes, after the sprawling Choristus, Oversteps felt refreshing. Autechre had managed to reinvent themselves by exercising restraint. The album feels super focused, with the sound choices being bright and emotionally charged. It was easily the most immediate LP by them since Tri Repete, and showed that they could be inventive without having to be complicated. What do you think about that? And, you know, does the album sound so completely different from the last few to you?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, it's definitely a different philosophy than Choristus and everything. I like what the listener Darren said, the most inventive without being complicated kind of thing, because I think Autechre does, especially the more current stuff, like it gets that, like, you know, bleep and bloop, you know, computer, like just dense, hard to like grasp anything. And this one like doesn't do that, even though, you know, this is sort of like their first really, you know, fully Max MSP, you know, sort of thing. Like they're returning to that.
Yeah,
you know, so it is sort of interesting in the sense that it doesn't just go that weird, complicated, you know, kind of route. And I think that is like sort of what makes it an outlier a little bit.
Yeah, I was sort of like, I gotta admit, I'm like kind of disappointed by the comment that you read earlier from Sean, where it's like that they wanted to focus on melody because they had been focused on percussion for a while. Because my feeling was that they've done this like beautiful job throughout their career of like not really distinguishing between melody and percussion. You know, we talk so much about how sometimes like melodic sounds are being used for the percussion. Sometimes percussive sounds are being used to make the melody, and they're like blurring in between all the time to where you don't even know how to describe certain sounds. It seems like uncharacteristic of them to me to like limit themselves, like have that reductive view of music and sound design, to just say like, well, let's just focus on melody, because when have they ever even thought of melody in that way? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is reductive. You're right. Because yeah, we've talked about it before. I mean, there's so many like tracks where like, you know, a tom sound or the bass drum or something like is sort of the melody, or I mean, even like, you know, what is kind of being the snare or something, you know, like they can they could play those like rhythms and beats like in a melodic kind of way. So yeah, you're right. Like it's a strange comment and a reductive comment to now just concern yourself like solely with, you know, regular old synth melody.
Yeah, to like make those categories all of a sudden, because, you know, I agree that like stuff like Draft and Untilted are very percussion focused, but I'm not one of the people who feels like, you know, Untilted specifically is like lacking for melody. It's just that like percussion is sort of becoming the melody in a lot of cases. Like there's so many great hooks on that record, and it's just like it's got a fascinating, you know, category blending going on there, where it's just like weird that they decided to limit themselves. You know, we sort of talked about this a little bit, but maybe we can break the rule just for a moment. And, you know, I want to ask, does Oversteps foreshadow their future work in any way? And what do you make of them like kind of switching to Max MSP here and sticking with that forever? Is there like something about Oversteps that feels like a eureka moment to you?
I think the reason they switch to Max here and stay with it, in one of those interviews from this period, I read like this is sort of like, I think at the time when I forget who it was, one of them, and we talked about it, it was like the reason chorists exist, basically, like one of them moves to a different city, and so like they have to start working like by sending files back and forth, and they found that like MIDI, you know, is a small, like kind of easily usable file, and so they just kind of each have the same setup, and you know, you email or whatever back then the MIDI files, and then you play and it, you set the analog synth then the same way. Yeah, I think it was with Rob. He said you know send a picture of the synth, and you know, you put the knobs in the same place, you've got the same thing, you know, in both of these locations. So I think it like just becomes an easy way to work, you know, remotely, which is very 2020 2021.
Yeah they're kind of doing what iOS and Digit did with the Choruses live set reconstruction that
yeah,
we talked about.
Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah.
They just happen to be reconstructing in each other's studios. You know, to me, when I listen to Oversteps, I guess I hear it as a eureka moment in the sense of like they seem to figure out how to get the best of both worlds when I read their descriptions of the process here, which is like they like jamming, they also like algorithmic, sort of generative stuff. But they're also sort of you know, perfectionists. And what they seem to be saying that they did with this album is like, you know, in contrast to Choruses specifically, is like you could sort of jam or generate ideas, and then you could sort of zoom in on things and be like, what, you know, that's a part that we like.
Yeah.
Why do we like it? Let's like look at the data or the programming or whatever. Let's even design a new algorithm that actually does that thing that we did like sort of improvisationally and build out from there, you know. So it's like they can sort of jam and stumble upon ideas in an improvisational way, but then they have the perfectionist power to like get inside of it and tweak it. And I feel like that might be what we get a lot of in the 2010s. You know what I mean?
That's good.
You know, one last question on this point. Why is this a normal length album? It's like we don't get another normal length album until Sign. Right. And it's just weird because we were talking about Choruses is like, oh, they're in the digital era now. You know, they've realized like this is the digital era, you know, playlists are a thing, like you know, there's less time constraints, you know, you can mix and match, and all of a sudden they like reel back from that for just one album, to make like a straight up disc.
Yeah, it's strange because, and I even said it earlier, you know, like if you didn't know any better, it seems so much like more intuitive to switch like the Choruses universe with Oversteps in the order, because they come, this is just a regular old CD length, a long CD, but it, you know, it fits on one disc, and I don't know, maybe it's because, I mean, like I said, I think this record kind of goes on too long, overstays its welcome, oversteps its welcome, if you will. And so maybe they just like knew, like, we can't take this any long, you know, if this was a 3-hour, yeah, you know, playlist kind of thing, it would be, I think, really awful.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's just, I mean, I don't think it's bad at all. It's just sort of like, you know, it's not as good as you know, other records of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that it could be that they were sort of inspired by the idea of reacting against the digital era a little bit, and like not spreading out so much, and like really, really focusing in on the minutiae, as they kind of describe. All right, I think we can start talking about favorite tracks, but first I want to quiz you. There are quite a few bolded tracks here, but I want you to try to guess. There are, like, what are the two highest? Two are tied for the clear highest here. What do you think they are?
I think maybe Known One. I feel like people like that. And maybe Trill.
No and no. They are both bolded. But the top are Sea on Sea, which, if okay. I'm being honest, is maybe just like a better Known One, if I had to pick there. And then UOP, the last track.
Oh, okay.
Surprisingly.
Yeah, that surprises me.
What are your favorite tracks? What would you be bolding here?
I like Islanders a bit. I like Known One quite a lot. But I also, like, I was thinking today when I was, you know, thinking about my favorite tracks, do I just like those because they're at the front of the record and I haven't really gotten tired of the record yet? I think that might just be, I mean, I think, like you said, Sea on Sea is sort of a different version of Known One, you know, like you said, a better version. I think I like Known One more, but maybe just because it's track three and Sea on Sea's track six.
Yeah,
I should have listened to this on shuffle. I know that's against my my religion, but I
was wondering the same thing, because if you look at like the Rate Your Music ratings, like the Saint Eprio, Redfall, and Krylon, like that little suite, is all the lowest rated tracks right in a row. They're all at a 3.7, and I kind of felt like I had lost steam by that little stretch as well, and I kept wondering, like, what if I would like Krylon the most if it had just been like the first of the chiming, glittering, ambient type pieces, you know? Like I should have tried listening in reverse or something, or listening on shuffle, as you said. But it's just like, you are just so worn out by the time you get to Krylon, because you've heard that like same track several times by then.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really surprises me that UOP is the highest rated here because of that same, even though that one's not as like repetitive, I think it's just like by that point I'm just kind of out of steam and I'm having to like force myself to pay attention, especially you know, Saint Epro through Krylon. But yeah, I really do wonder, and I wish I'd thought about it before recording, you know, like maybe I would like Krylon the most if it was the first one of those tracks.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, like, UWOP is absolutely bizarre. I mean, it's like the most bombastic closer. It feels like totally unearned to me, but it's like the most just wild, like booming thing. It's quite weird because, like, I guess what I want to say to this album's credit is that there is like this little thread of blown out percussion, kind of like blown out bass sounds kind of running through it. Like, you get a little bit of it in Islanders, you know, like pops up again, like in Trill, and then in like Disho Quub, very obviously. And then like in Saint Eprio as well, actually maybe even more than UOP, but it is sort of like a light touch that runs through the record. And by the time you get to UOP, I mean, it just becomes like this blown out, like, chaos. It starts to verge on noise music because it's just like the whole track has this kind of like dying battery thing to it where it's just like glitching and like disintegrating out of existence or something. I also feel like it's very weird about this track. There's like a string sound that doesn't get affected by this like totally blown out, like garbled, gnarled mess of thing. And it feels like the track is soundtracked by the strings. You know what I mean? Like there's a track and it has a soundtrack to it. But anyway, I mean, I just sort of want to like highlight that as I do feel like UOP is like very interesting, but I don't even understand how it fits here at all.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that bass thing. I thought the same thing. That's maybe my favorite like thing about this record. I like how, you know, it's sort of a little thread throughout the whole thing, and I feel like they always like they keep it in control. You know, it's such like a, you know, kind of like destructive, yeah. like, you know, noise, you know, kind of music thing. And, but they always like sort of, it'll be in a track that's like otherwise, you know, kind of pretty or something. And it doesn't sound out of place or like a mistake or anything. I think they like control that that chaos of, yeah. of the blown outness pretty well, and that is I think you're right in UWOP it's sort of like really you know fully comes together and yeah. And you know it's a good closer in that sense. Yeah, I like that about the record.
Yeah, I just feel like it's weird because it's a light touch, and then I'm always shocked when I get to Saint Epreo, which is like the most gnarled. Like I was writing down, like it reminds me of like something between like you know the XXXTentacion song, like Look at Me.
Yeah, like how, yeah. it's how so blown out
the bass sound. somewhere in between that and like the interlude tracks on Godspeed's Alleluia record, like yeah. with that like kind of bass blown out sound like going on it. It's like it just feels like oh, whoa, okay, so we're doing this like all of a sudden. Like I didn't know we were in like blown out noise territory, but then it kind of recedes and then comes back for UWOP. I mean, it's like a thread, but it's a weird thread that maybe isn't fully developed. And then UWOP also kind of slams you out of nowhere. You know, I guess I've talked plenty about it, but you know, I think C on C is like a pretty gorgeous track. Trial to me is like an absolute highlight. It's one of those cases where it's like just sort of a real steady kind of beat, but then just a lovely kind of like piling on of melodic sounds and like strange little licks and stuff that just are like cascading and cascading, and it just seems to like keep developing and growing as the track goes on. So those are probably my favorites. Listener Darren wrote, the sequence of tracks from C on C up to and including D Show Quub is, in my opinion, the most perfectly arranged flow of material. I just dig it so much, and Trial is a total earworm. Likewise, listener Joe writes, you sometimes talk about different album centerpieces, and here there are two, Trial and D Show Quub. Both songs are absolute trips. The way the melody in D Show gets hinted at in the first minute and finally comes together is mind-blowing, and the second the beat starts and you hear it together with the melody is one of the most satisfying musical moments I've ever experienced. Listener Andreas calls C on C his favorite track, and listener Sean says D Show is one of my favorite cuts. It always conjures images of a samurai showdown. Doesn't a lot of this album remind you of video game music? Islanders maybe sounds like the Contra music. Any thoughts on any of those comments?
Well, I feel bad that the first comment, listener Dan, we've been shitting on that that sequence for a little bit, and then but the video game thing, I do feel that a little bit, and I feel it even kind of more on the record we're about to talk about, Move of 10, so I'll save it a little bit, but I definitely I don't really know what the Contra music sounds like, but I do feel you know the video game thing throughout both of these,
yeah, and kind of like a soundtracky vibe as well. I sort of wanted to make a comment about D Show Quub in particular, which is like something that sort of bothers me about this record is that like it's got this great driving beat. Like it's sort of like crispy and blown out and crunchy in a way that like almost reminds me of a Chiastic Slide a little bit. And there are just like these huge gusts of like digital wind just like submerging the whole track. I mean, I think it's like brilliant, but it takes like a minute and a half to start. And I started to realize at that point that there are a bunch of tracks like that that like take a really long time to start for some reason. We just get sort of like weird droning noise. I think the most annoying is RS, the first track, which like is just silence for a long time. And I just started feeling like this might be a major problem with this album, actually, is that every track like takes so long to get going. And I also noticed that a lot of the tracks that are pretty beat heavy, they have this like start stop quality to them that like makes it feel like it never really achieves liftoff. And I guess that helps it sort of fit in with the rest of the album, but it's like the constant like just grinding to a halt and then like slowly starting back up makes this record feel like twice as long as it actually is.
Definitely. It's like we never really like get momentum going on this record.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm glad because I don't think we even mentioned RS, the opening track yet, but yeah, how goddamn annoying is it that it takes like, it's a good like 30 seconds before you can like audibly hear something's starting to happen. You know, it's not the best way to begin an album.
I like that track, but I just feel like they're like deliberately all the way through this thing, like trying to pull it back. Like anytime something like, you know, because you hear like the sounds on Saint Epriel, like these absolute blown out sounds, mm-hmm. and you think like, well, that's going to be, you know, this is going to be like banging. And, you know, even stuff like Islanders kind of sounds like, okay, so we're kicking it into high gear now. And then like you start to realize that it just sort of like slumps back into like this kind of moody drifting thing. And I just feel like sometimes they're like, you can feel them actually pulling back on the harness or something to like keep it in this like mellow territory. Okay, so let's, you know, I guess I sort of spoiled it, but the on Rate Your Music, the lowest rated points are those three tracks, Saint Epriel, Redfall, and Krylon. What are your least favorite tracks here?
I think I'm going to agree with those. I mean, I've said it multiple times already, but it's just, maybe it's just their placement, but that section just gets like so, I don't know, just kind of like boring in the sense. I agree with you. There's great moments on Saint Epriel and all. It's just by that point in the record, I'm so tired and just kind of my attention is hard to grasp by that point.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple tracks in particular where it's like O equals zero, Redfall, which I cannot even remember how that goes at all right now. I literally wrote down in my notes, like, I don't know what to say about this. Like, I just don't. It's just like more of what we've been hearing. I can't keep thinking of new ways to describe it. You know, it's just like, I don't know what to do with it. Listener Mike calls OSView X3 a weak point, exemplifying that wandering around quality he was talking about. And listener Sean says, the only track I'm not hot on is O equals zero. To me, it starts off so cool with a really strong theme, but devolves into sounding too much like generative music in a bad way. Similarly, listener Joe writes, for a long time, PCE Freeze 2.81 was one of my least favorite songs of all time and by far my least favorite Autechre track. It always just seemed like a plodding, boring, unchanging, uninteresting idea that went on 5 minutes too long. A few years ago, I set it as the alarm to wake me up in the morning because my philosophy was that since setting a song as an alarm makes you start to hate the song, I use my least favorite song, I would be safe. Oddly enough, I started to really like the song after a few months hearing it over and over again. I wonder if others have had similar experiences with tracks they've hated. So what do you think about any of these low points that listeners noted? Do you ever feel like they are too generative, you know, specifically these ones? And have you ever had the experience, just out of curiosity, that Joe describes here?
Well, first off, with the O equals zero, yeah, I could feel that a little bit. It does become like a little too generative-y. I think, like what you said earlier, the, you know, there's points where it feels just like some sort of soulless app.
Yeah.
You know, like I think they do a good job of bringing in humanity to it, you know, at points. But I could see, you know, I wouldn't argue with somebody. Joe's experience, I like that. I like that thought of, you know, just put a song that you already don't like. You know, but I have done that, you know, like in like high school or whatever, when I first got a phone, remember, like you would get like, you know, a song as your ringtone, and stuff. And then, yeah. Like, do you remember ring back tones? It was like,
yeah,
when you would call somebody, that it would play a song. My like girlfriend in high school had one. And so, like, you know, obviously the person I called all the time, and it was Mr. Tambourine Man by Bob Dylan. And it would get so goddamn annoying, like having to hear the same, you know, 5-10 seconds of Mr. Tambourine Man.
Yeah,
when you're calling somebody, I'm glad we've done away with ringtones. Yeah, and even your alarm, like my alarm on my phone now is just like it sounds like a, you know, a clock radio alarm.
I've never had an experience where I came to like something.
Exactly.
Something. Actually, I was thinking of, I had for a long time in those days, the Portishead track, like Machine Gun, as my ringtone, like the part where like the blaring kind of synth trumpet thing comes in at the end. And to this day, like when it happens, I totally ruined that great fucking song for myself. So way to go, Gabe. All right. So let's sort of sum this up. How did it go with Oversteps these past 2 weeks? How would you sum up your feelings?
You know, it went kind of bad. Like I realize I do not like this record as much as I like would have said I did before spending 2 weeks with it. I think what it was is, always before, I just would kind of listen to it, you know, once or twice, or just like, it was a record I would throw on, you know, going to sleep or something. And that's sort of like what the record works best in. I mean, you said it, like it sort of loses its magic and its allure, like on repeated listen. And it definitely did for me. I had to bring it down a couple notches on Rate Your Music. I was disappointed. I had the opposite of what with Choristus. Like Choristus, I came to love it so much, and you know, Oversteps, I came to dislike it.
Yeah, I had kind of a similar experience as I did with Draft, sadly, which is just that when I found it kind of bewildering and didn't listen to it that often, I was like pretty impressed with it, and then once I spent like a lot of serious time with it, I just realized there wasn't that much to grab onto. You know, so any kind of final thoughts on the backlash that seems to be happening to this record? I mean, it sounds like you think it's deserved. Like what happened to us these past 2 weeks has just sort of slowly happened to Autechre fans all over the place.
Yeah, I think like, you know, I think it's maybe the same exact thing. Like just there's people spending more time with it. I mean, you know, the record's about to be 11 years old in a couple days. I could see like why. You know, this critically got that pretty well acclaimed, and I can see that, you know, maybe a critic listened to it three or four times or something, you know, before writing the review. And I mean, that's how I felt, you know, originally. Like I thought that this was sort of like the return, you know, they're back. This is the beginning of, you know, like the greatest period and everything. And, you know, upon further inspection, I don't feel like that is actually the case, and I think just maybe solely time has brought up about that backlash, which I do think is deserved.
Yeah, you know, we had this comment from listener Sean who said, "I think Autechre's discography until Oversteps beg the question: what would a full LP of melodic and or ambient Autechre sound like? I think they totally delivered a knockout of a take on these concepts. It says a lot about their discography that this knockout probably doesn't even crack their top five efforts. If this were another artist, it would probably be held in higher regard, I suspect. This one is just too outside their wheelhouse for it to be a fan favorite." I mean, maybe it goes without saying, but what do you think about that? I mean, if it just wasn't comparing with all of Autechre's other work, would you just be like, wow, this is a great record?
I don't think at this point I would think of it as a great record, even if it wasn't Autechre. I think I feel the same. Like right now, like I don't hate it. You know, I'll still listen to it, you know, as a nighttime or a reading kind of record. And if it was just like, oh, you know, some no name, you know, artist release this album, I think I would feel the exact same way about it. It'd maybe be a little cooler because it would be like, you know, just some guy you've never heard of, you know, dropped it and it was pretty good for that, you know, kind of thing. But I don't think it would drastically change my feelings on it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like, I don't want to spend too much time on it because we're already running longer than what I wanted to, but you know, when it comes to like the musical context, which we always like to try to touch on, you know, I was thinking about like 103's Point Never kind of blowing up at this time and how similar this record is to kind of that style that, you know, he's just sort of launching, like that really bright, you know, synthetic kind of vibe. And I started thinking too about like Arca, who's I don't think has quite arrived by 2010, but is sort of maybe starting and will be blowing up very soon. And just sort of thinking of this record as like, I would kind of group it with like some of the lesser works by 103's Point Never and Arca, where it's just like, they're not like my favorite artists. They have some knockouts, but a lot of their stuff is just kind of like, yeah, it's cool. I put it on sometimes. I forget about it for most of the time, but like, I feel like it's deserving of kind of being in that in its era a little bit, but it would maybe be kind of like just a cool gem of the era, but not like a gem of Autechre or of music as a whole.
Yeah, I think the 103's Point Never comparison is pretty spot on. That's how I feel too. Like if you ask me like, do you like 103's Point Never? I would say like, oh yeah, he's pretty rad. But whenever I listen to him, like I quickly get tired of him. And yeah, that's sort of like exactly the experience I had with this record. So I think that's really good.
All right. Well, we're going to move on to Move of 10.
Yeah. Ateca released Move of 10 just a few months after Overstep on June 14th, 2010. It's classified as an EP, but at 10 tracks and 48 minutes, it's often mistaken for an album or a mini LP, as AllMusic calls it. Unlike Ateca's other album-length EPs, however, Move of 10 is not usually seen as anything more than a companion to Overstep's, one that has all the straightforward beats that were mostly missing from the main record. Indeed, reception has been a little mixed. Critics praise the lighthearted fun, one of Ateca's most dance floor friendly records ever, is how The Wire described it, but at a 3.35 on Rate Your Music, it's tied with the widely disliked Choristus.
Yeah, so what is your previous familiarity with Move 10?
Move of 10, I always like sort of, I really did just sort of think of it as that companion thing, and you know, it was one I've listened to, but I never really like come back to. I don't think about much. It really, the companion piece is really how I thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely like thrown it on before, but I don't think I've ever spent serious time with it. Like maybe if I was kind of, you know, doing some writing and I had Oversteps on in the background, I might have gone right on to Move of 10, but I like never actually like paid attention, I don't think, in my whole life. So how would you describe the overall sound of Move 10? Does it have its own sound and identity separate from Oversteps?
I think it actually does, you know, but before spending 2 weeks with it, because I think like you, I've never really like dug deep into it. Before doing that, I think I would have said that no, it is just this kind of companion to Oversteps, but it really like is kind of different. I think it's using like a similar or maybe even the same like sound palette, but it's completely different in the sense that this is like a beat record. You know, it's very like, you know, acid. It's whereas, you know, Oversteps was maybe Ateca does ambient. This is like Ateca does acid kind of thing. It's much more like upbeat and dancey.
Yeah, I was thinking about that actually, because there are those kind of like little touches of what I would call techno arpeggios or something in Oversteps, but they are so like radically recontextualized that you wouldn't even notice like that influence. Here they're more front and center, like where you do start saying like, oh, this sounds like house, or this sounds like techno, or this sounds like acid or something. And that might be because they are pretty straightforward beats. You know, it's also notable, I think, that as we were saying on Oversteps, that like the beat would just be some kind of like pulse or foundation from which they would build all these textures. Here, it's like the beat is the star of the show, and some of those same sounds from Oversteps are just used as like dressing on the beats. Like I kept thinking about the first track, Echagon S, where there are just these huge blasts of like the most reverbed out like synth walls or something. And it just feels almost like somebody has cut up stems from Oversteps or something and are using it as, you know what I mean, like little like peppering it through what is like a totally kind of a wild beat that like almost feels like a little bit untilted-y at points to me.
Yeah, that's what I meant by saying like, you know, it's got that same like sound palette. I think maybe like stems is a better thing. Yeah, it's like they've built these wild beats and then thrown sort of that palette of Oversteps not even on top of it but in it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not like strictly true, because there are tracks like Iris Was a Pupil or something where it's just like, or like YLMO, that it just feels like more of that kind of like glittering, glistening interlude.
But here they feel more like sort of interludes, which,
that's true.
You know, like with Amber, I think like in this context, like those work better.
Yeah, that might be true, actually. You know, here's an email from listener Joe. Says, I hear people say that Move of 10 is a better release than Oversteps and that it would have been a better choice to release as their 10th album. To me, this is ludicrous. In a previous email, I compared EP7 to Radiohead's Amnesiac because both are fully realized, full-length releases with their own distinct identities, despite being considered lesser releases after major albums. Move of 10 feels more like the Comlag EP, a shorter collection of interesting outtakes and alternate versions that just doesn't feel strong enough to stand on its own merit. Joe also says that if you listen to Move of 10 as two smaller EPs, like how it was released on vinyl in two parts, the first half is interesting and forward-looking, while the second contains ideas that were more fleshed out on Oversteps. So what do you think of that? And how do you think of this EP in terms of like what it actually is? Like, is it outtakes or B-sides or what?
You know, I didn't think about the way it's released on vinyl, because that does seem like much less interesting way to consume this record. But, you know, I don't know. I think I would maybe call this more of an Amnesiac than a Comlag. You know, like Comlag is something that's like strictly for, you know, like pretty big fans, you know, to even have heard of or something. Whereas like Amnesiac, most people just think of it as sort of like a side companion LP, or, you know, a mini LP sort of thing. It feels like kind of that here. You know, we've got sort of similar sounds and everything, but done in a different way. But like you said, like Iris is a Pupil and at YLMO, you know, like use those kind of same interlude-y type glittery sounds of Oversteps. Which, you know, like the like those sort of feel like B-sides. But I feel like, you know, things like Etch-A-Gone and PCE Freeze, those don't really feel like they were cut from Oversteps. Like, they don't feel like they fit on Oversteps, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but do you feel like these were beat-heavy, you know, tracks that came out of the same sessions and they just decided that they wouldn't fit on Oversteps, and so they just kind of stuck them randomly on the second disc? Or do you think like this is an album with an idea?
I don't know. You know, what I think it may have been, and I'll say that I've not ever heard a bootleg of the tours around this, but maybe it's like when they were, you know, working on the live stuff, like using the same kind of, you know, patches or whatever from Oversteps, like, you know, maybe they wanted to have a little more beat for, you know, to make the show fun. And maybe these kind of things like came out of it in that way, because it doesn't feel like, oh, you know, these are just like from the same sessions as Oversteps. Like it feels like something worked on in the same era, but like not at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just pretty torn. I mean, like when I first read Joe's email, I thought that was pretty compelling, but then like, as I thought about it, I was like, well, you know, M62 is on the second half, and it's, I think, like much more like Etch-A-Gone-esque, like it's just a sick like kind of techno house like thump with like all these kind of dizzying like interesting little licks and things all over it, and like would fit really well on a DJ mix or something like that. I mean, I feel like somebody has to use this because it's just like such a groove. I just absolutely fucking love this track, so I can't like split it out just half and half so easily. But it does feel like sometimes we're in outtake territory, you know, other times maybe less so. But I just like couldn't wrap my head around like why, for me, this doesn't hang together as a collection at all. It really just feels like an assortment that could be shuffled or anything. You know, I think about like it's almost funny because between Rue One and Nth Diffuser B, which is where the two vinyl releases would be split, by the way, weirdly, but they flow right into each other like with a smooth transition, and yet the transition makes no fucking sense at all. Like, they have no business leading right into each other. It's just like a whoosh that like immediately gets cut off and like turns into something totally different, and it just like really brought to the fore the fact that nothing flows at all here. You know, like I think of like M62, just it just ends, like it just sort of trails off, and then we are in a completely different territory with YLMO. You know what I mean? Do you feel like there's any flow or any cohesiveness at all here?
I think the lack of like, I like Move of 10, you know, after these 2 weeks spending with it, I came to like it quite a bit, actually. But I don't agree with the people who said like, you know, this should have been their 10th album or anything, because it doesn't feel like an album, like, because you're right. You know, that cohesiveness isn't quite there, and that's something that I feel like Odd-Taker's always done like super well on all the records, because you're right. I mean, you know, like the track 4 and 5 like flow right into each other, but like sort of in this you know, insane kind of way that doesn't make much sense, and other tracks just make no attempt at flowing into each other or anything. It really like feels like an EP, because I think like, while certainly some of the EPs, you know, like do have cohesiveness. You know, I think that they're much more loose with that on these, you know, minor releases.
Yeah, it just feels like a bunch of simple ideas that, like, start, they come to a complete stop usually, and then just something completely different starts up. You know, again, they can't help themselves, but they, with, I can't even say up the last track, Sepuk Mix or whatever, it's like, it does have kind of a climactic feel. It feels almost like a poor man's UOP a little bit to me. But it just feels so weird because it like tries to end like with some note of finality, but there was like no flow to begin with. You know, I got to break the rule again real quick just to ask if you see this as kind of like a sign plus situation. You know, we talked a lot about how I cannot understand how Plus is supposed to work as an album, like what its identity is or what its flow is. And yet it's got some high highs, you know, maybe like some stuff that just didn't fit on Sign. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I do kind of see that here a little bit. Because I sort of feel the same way as I do with these two. Like, I think I like Move of 10, like, as something to listen to more. Like, I think individually, like, there's songs on here I like a lot. I really like PCE Freeze, which that listener, you know, hated. I like that track a lot and stuff. Over the 2 weeks, I played this record, you know, a lot more than I normally would, whatever our secondary release kind of was. And while I haven't dug super deep into Sign and Plus, like because of this podcast, you know, to not confuse myself, I feel like Sign is the better like album, you know, as an album. But I think I enjoy like moments and songs in Plus, you know, much more. It feels that same kind of way. I think maybe Plus is more of an album than Move of 10 is, you know? Like, I really do feel like Move of 10 is a sort of, like, EP or, you know, mini LP sort of thing. And I don't get that, like, that feeling as much from Plus. Like, it feels... And they're calling it an LP. And it feels more LP-ish than anything else.
Yeah, I'm just realizing that I put Joe's PCE Freeze comment in the overstep section, which just goes to show how maybe little identity Move of 10 has and how I just like actually forgot that it's not even on Move of 10, though it does sort of sound like it wouldn't fit at all. But, you know, I haven't seen a lot of people defending like any kind of cohesiveness on Move of 10, but we did hear from listeners who love various tracks, like you were just saying, on this release. Listener Mike writes, "Don't get me wrong, I really like Oversteps. Just Move hits me more and has more of an impact for me. For instance, the beginning track, Echigan S, is amazing and my favorite track out of both groups of releases. Listener Joe praises Echigan S, Y7, and Ryu 1, and says that Nth Diffuser B is quite possibly the best track on the entire release. Listener Sean says Ryu 1 is straight G shit, nasty robot funk." What do you think about these, and what are your favorite tracks here?
I like Nth Diffuser B a bit. This record is just like a lot of fun. I feel like, yeah. Especially where Oversteps is basically not at all fun. And so this one was like, it was a good like breather, especially over the 2 weeks, like having to listen to Oversteps over and over, like to have this fun record to also get to listen to.
Yeah.
But like I mentioned, I my favorite song, I really like PCE Freeze. A lot. It's very like, I can see why people don't like it. It's very like repetitive, but I really like the beat in it. It's almost like kind of a krautrocky like sort of beat, kind of thing.
Yeah, I like how the big like they're like these big kind of like swells or like blasts of very dissonant sound. Like it's not pretty melody or anything. It like makes it quite strange. I feel like I like Echigan S. for sort of the same reason. I mean, that like that just swelling like reverb sort of climbing sound that happens, you know, it sort of like breaks back down into this kind of like lopsided beat, but then these like huge reverb swells are frightening. I don't know, there's something about this, like I feel pretty relaxed when I listen to Oversteps. When I listen to Echigan S, I feel like absolutely jittery and like anxious or something, just because I know that like insane swell is coming. I feel like my favorite track here is Y7, which just has, it's like a mind fuck of a sound, I think, with like this like wet buzz, like, that's so front and center. It's like, feels like it's like swallowing your head up or something, like digital bubbles or something, like all over your ears. And then there's like just this cool, like, bass lick or something that just, like, I wrote down, it sounds like a wet noodle. I don't know why, but I just love, I love, love, love that track. And I love M62 for the same reasons as I was just talking about. And I also agree the Rue one is real G shit. I like that description as nasty robot funk. You know, a lot of fun here. You know, listener Jordan writes, Iris was a pupil from Move of 10, really should have been put on Oversteps. I don't get why it wasn't included. It would have fit right in. I mean, you know, I want to ask you about that, but I also want to ask, like, do you kind of wish that any of like the highlights here, because I sort of agree with you that like the highs are higher on this record. Like I sort of enjoyed listening to it more than Oversteps, even though I can't say it's better than Oversteps, but do you wish that some of these tracks had made it onto Oversteps? Do you maybe wish that like these two releases had been like merged, or like the best tracks from both had been combined into one different album, anything like that?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it would work. I feel like Oversteps has like such an identity that like adding any Move of 10 song into Oversteps, I feel like it would stick out too much. And even I feel like if you just like combined them as two, that would sort of like, it would sort of make those Oversteps songs feel like the interlude kind of things on Amber, except there would be more of them than there is.
Yeah.
And it would just be like, it would make a real confusing album. I think like at least like Oversteps now, I think its biggest like positive is the like cohesiveness of the record. And you would totally lose that by adding anything from Move of 10 or combining them in any way.
Yeah, I can't imagine at all how it would work. And yet I like can't shake the feeling because, yeah, for me, Etchagon S, Y7, and M62 in particular are better than anything that's on Oversteps. And I can't think of any way to incorporate them, but it does feel like too bad that they weren't on, you know, I just feel like a lot of people are going to sort of, especially with Oversteps, like kind of facing this backlash now, a lot of people are just going to skip Move of 10 entirely, I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything here that you like really don't like?
No, not really. I think, you know, like it being 47 minutes, it doesn't overstay its welcome at all. I think every track here is pretty good. Iris Was a Pupil is maybe my least favorite, if I had to pick one.
Yeah.
For the same reasons, basically, you were saying earlier, it's sort of, it's one of the ones that feels like an Oversteps, you know, kind of thing. Nothing here like is awful.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that I can give this its full due because I was going back and forth between Oversteps and Move of 10 all the time. So anytime I heard like Iris Was a Pupil or YLMO, you know, I just felt like, all right, for fuck's sake, we're doing this Oversteps shit again. Like, and you know, maybe you're right that they would work a little bit more, like breaks in the action or interludes or something. They wouldn't be annoying at all. They would be kind of nice and refreshing. But if you're listening to these two releases in the same like sitting, you're going to be sick of them by the time you get to this.
It melts, you know, together. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So just wrapping up on your impressions, how it went with Move of Steps these past 2 weeks. I feel like you're right on the edge, maybe too afraid to say that you do like it better than Oversteps.
I definitely like enjoy listening to Move of 10 more. And so I would say, yeah, I like it better. Yeah. Definitely.
Okay. All right. I mean, yeah, I guess I just can't say that. I can say that there are several tracks here that I like better than anything on Oversteps, but it just has no identity for me as a record. And Oversteps has a pretty clear identity. I don't like love the identity, but I love that it has an identity. So in some ways I do sort of appreciate that if they did like cut some of these tracks from Oversteps, you know, last minute or something, then in some ways it was a good move to do that. It's too bad that some of these, like, I think fantastic tracks are sort of stuck on this, like, half, you know, maybe half awesome stuff, half leftover kind of thing, like Joe was describing. But I still think it's, you know, quite a fun listen, quite an awesome listen. So Where did Oversteps and Move of 10 end up on your running rankings that we always count down here?
Yeah, Oversteps, I put pretty far down. It just right above Draft.
Wow.
Just slightly better than Draft. So that puts it at number 14 on my list here. And then Move of 10, I'm putting just a couple spaces higher, just right above Untilted, right below In Vain, which would put it at number 13.
Wow. So you actually did go ahead and rank it higher.
Yeah, but just slightly. Yeah.
I put Oversteps at number 13, also just ahead of Draft, but I then put Move of 10 just behind Oversteps. So that's actually one above Draft. You know, pretty disappointing. But I just felt like, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, I would rather listen to Move of 10 than Draft for sure. And I would rather listen to Oversteps than Draft. But I just cannot say that Move of 10 is a better album than Oversteps. So
I get you.
I guess nothing changed about our top 10s, but you want to read your top 10 right now?
Yeah, 10, Sickly Sweet, Garbage, Incunabula, EP7, Confield, Choristus, Amber, LP5, Chiastic Slide, and Tri Repete.
And I've got number 10, Incunabula, LP5, Gantz Graph, Sickly Sweet, Amber, Choristus, Untilted, Confield, Chiastic Slide, and Tri Repete. I really hope we're approaching that era where there might be some, you know, challenges for those top top spots. So any closing thoughts on this chapter of the Autechre journey?
You know, I'm sort of glad to be moving on from it. You know, I'm disappointed because I thought that this was like the time it was gonna really, I thought this was going to be a really fun episode to do, you know, to prepare for it. It was less than I had hoped for.
Yeah. I'll pull back the curtain a little bit and say that, you know, we had to record this late, because we had some issues come up, and then we were like, you know, should we record it tonight? And it's like quite late tonight, like much later than we would record, or should we wait a couple more days? And I was like, I don't want to listen to this anymore. Let's just fucking record tonight. And like, yeah, so that I can move on to the almighty XI. But yeah, I mean, I'll just say that I was sort of, I was like underwhelmed. I was a little disappointed. It wasn't like the record that I once thought it was. But I am happy to be moving on.
Yep. All right. Well, what do you think about Oversteps and Move of 10? We're doing another listener episode next week. So send us your thoughts. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode in 2 weeks, XI and L Event. We want your opinions and hot takes on those as well. gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up YouTube. Stay connected. Twitter, Instagram, all those @gonkcastpod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya. We'll be right back.